Nearly 1.7 million people were apprehended at the southern U.S. border over the last year, the highest total in U.S. history. That's according to data released on Friday by the U.S. Customs Border Protection. In addition to the new arrivals, migrants, including Dreamers and DACA recipients, are already in our neighborhoods. DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, is the much-debated Obama-era program that temporarily protects undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children, all of whom face deportation if the program were to end. The New England Board of Higher Education estimates that there are around 10,000 DACA recipients in our communities. Today, we feature one of those migrants, activist Eduardo Samaniego. This is And Another Thing. I'm Maya Schwader.
I'm Dara Kennedy. Welcome to the Monday Conversation, where we connect with guests on a focused topic and learn of their journey. Today, we learn that Eduardo's journey begins in his home country of Mexico and currently has him fighting against the United States ICE detention program and fighting for Dreamers, all from right here in Western Massachusetts.
Basically, I had, you know, maybe like two uncles living here in the United States. So I was introduced to the United States because of them, you know, as people who came up from a very, low-income background. Being in the United States really meant a lot in Mexico at that time. You know, I'm talking about, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. And so I always, you know, picture me coming to the United States to earn money, but also to have an education. And because of the rest of my family is back in Mexico, and I'm the only one who migrated after the two uncles that were here in the United States. I came to the United States with a visa, a tourist visa. It eventually expired. I went through a process of when I didn't have a stable home here in the United States. So, you know, instead of focusing on, you know, something like renewing my visa or anything like that, I was much more, you know, focused on basically just surviving here in the U.S. And so it expired and I didn't know, you know, up until the point when I was applying for college. But I did come here with a tourist visa.
After you got here, how did you acclimate yourself to being in America?
I know that was a process that was just very fluid. It was incredibly, smooth for me, because the idea of coming to the United States, so when it happened for me, it happened like I wanted to embrace a new society, new traditions, new ways of living, you know, a new society that I was walking into. I really wanted to learn the language. I wanted to have an education and go to college. And so that's basically how, you know, I started my path here in the United States, you know, seeking education, but also to know a new society and be part of it.
When you found out you were undocumented, what was your reaction? How did you process that?
Personally, this was a very powerful moment in my life. As it is for thousands of young kids, you know, across the United States. I believe the last time I checked is 60,000 undocumented people graduate from high school every year. And that's when I found out about being undocumented. And so I processed it in a manner that was, you know, I was a teenager. I was, you know, young and I thought I could do everything, but the fact that I didn't have access to education, because I learned I didn't have a social security number, was probably one of the most, like, decisive points in my life. Because, you know, after that, I thought, like, you know, very little of my work would ever have meaning. So I just didn't, you know, I was not the same after learning, but I learned to you know, think of it as an obstacle that also had to be overcome. I'm just glad it happened that way, that I saw it that way as another obstacle, you know, as it is for 11 million undocumented immigrants every day.
Do you see any similarities going on with people that are coming, evacuees that are coming in from Afghanistan, refugees that are coming in from Haiti, as to what you went through?
I'm someone who has experienced deportation in a large, you know, scale. You know, we're talking about almost 500,000 people deported every year. And so my circumstances are very different from people that are seeking refuge in the United States, and also who, you know, come here crossing the border by, you know, walking, you know, for miles in the desert. For me, luckily, I've been able to enter the United States legally. And for these people, however, they can't. And so I think that I see many, many similarities, but our plights are very, you know, intertwined at the end. But in the very end, it's a different story. But I do believe so, you know, that there is many similarities.
When did you decide to get involved with immigration activism as opposed to simply trying to get your education and build a life here?
I worked for it very hard for years. So I could attend college. I had a 3.9 GPA in my last semester before I learned about the fact that I couldn't go to college because I wasn't documented. That was a point when I wanted to be part of something, you know, as advocating for others to have access to education specifically, but also to a driver's license, to a permit to work, you know, to a permit to live a life with dignity, right? Which is essentially what is citizenship here in the U.S.
ICE is the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, which oversees America's immigration detention system. As of early July, federal statistics show that ICE was detaining more than 27,000 people nationwide in its own facilities and partnering correctional institutions. Eduardo Samaniego's own fight against ICE stems from his personal solitary confinement experience. And as he tells us, the poor handling of COVID-19 positive detainees with non-COVID migrants in facilities.
My experience in jail was the experience of millions, right, across the United States. We are the country that puts, you know, the most number of people behind bars for, you know, things such as owning $27, you know, and we put them in there for months. We all know someone who's been behind bars for someone, you know, small or you know, something really non that makes no sense. But I think that what really is specific to this is that, you know, really, I mean, Immigration and Customs Enforcement's eyes, as it exists, I think that we should not have eyes. Eyes should be abolished. And the people that have been behind bars as a result of their immigration status alone should be, you know, restituted, you know, some level of payment, because what they're put through just for wanting a better life is absolutely inhumane. And it's, you know, a shame and a stain in the history of this nation. There is about more than 45,000 people behind bars. They're maltreated. They are, you know, kept away from their food. Their ability to sleep is greatly disturbed. Their access to medicine, their access to, you know, a sanitized place of, you know, for sleeping. It's really a shame what we're doing, you know, in these jails to, you know, obviously tens of thousands of immigrants.
How active have you been trying to educate people on ICE, as you just described to us?
You know, obviously people were becoming a lot more aware little by little. When I came to Massachusetts, it was during my time in college, but also during the Trump administration. So I had been a lot more separated from the movement for immigrant rights, but equally as invested, you know, in my spirit and soul. But, you know, have worked in different ways throughout the years.
When did you find out that you were actually going to be sent back to Mexico?
You know, I could go on and on, but I think the last time when I was about to be deported, it's kind of a meaningless moment, because you really don't know what to expect, and nobody has ever mentioned being deported or what it feels like in your entire life. When I was actually deported, I was absolutely heartbroken. It was a very difficult moment, because in one part I was incredibly happy to see my family, and I think that is priceless. But at the same time, I kept healing as the months went on. And there were moments of incredibly just sadness and, you know, moments of, what should I do now? Should I continue to just start my life here, live here? Or should I try to go back to the United States? So it was also a moment of pondering and really asking questions about what was next for me in life.
You said that you were heartbroken once you got deported. What broke your heart?
Well, I think that the inability to see my friends, the inability to see the members of my family that I had made here in the United States and been in contact and been through really rough times together in the movement for immigrant rights and outside. And so I really think that really did it for me, that I wasn't able to, have a hug for my friends or my family that I had made. That was very difficult, to let go of that family for a few years.
I want to circle back to your experience with ICE. After you were picked up, you were put in solitary confinement for a little while, correct?
Yes, I was put in solitary confinement for something about a month to a month and a half. And I'm saying that because I really cannot remember. That's at least what it felt like. Solitary confinement should not be used, as it has already been banned in many states across the U.S. It is inhumane. It is a form of torture, according to the International Declaration of Human Rights. We just really shouldn't be putting people for COVID reasons or for any other reason in solitary confinement. It's a form of torture, and we should advocate to end it.
After the break, Eduardo continues his story of his journey from Mexico back to Western Massachusetts and the tough decisions that faced him. That's coming up on And Another Thing. Stay with us.
You're listening to And Another Thing on New England Public Media. I'm Dara Kennedy. Our Monday conversation today is with Mexican-born Eduardo Samaniego. He attended Hampshire College on scholarship, but his education was derailed when he found himself languishing in detention under the Trump administration's immigration laws. From his home in Northampton, Massachusetts, he compares the former practices to those of current President Biden.
I'm Maya Schwader. Eduardo had to make a tough decision on whether to remain with his family in Mexico or return to the United States to fight for those wanting a piece of the American dream. We asked him what else he's been working on since coming back to Western Massachusetts.
I am looking forward to establishing myself back in the United States after being in Mexico for 2 years and a half and experiencing deportation. But as the days go on, I've been able to participate in the lobbying happening in Washington, D.C., advocating for immigration reform and being included in the reconciliation process between the Senate and the House of Representatives. So that's one thing I have been doing recently. I was happy to have met with the staff of Senator Warnock in Georgia and Senator Ossoff. And look forward to be meeting with the senators from Massachusetts on my next visit, advocating for immigration reform.
So you managed to make it back to Western Massachusetts in August of this year. Why did you choose to come back here to relocate?
I personally couldn't have chosen a better place because, I'm being very realistic about our courts across the United States. They have been absolutely taken by right-wing, judges across the United States, not only at the Supreme Court, of the nation level, but also across states and counties. And so in order for me to be able to stay and have a chance at fighting to stay in the United States, I have to go before a judge next. And so my chances of having a fair judge, I'm not talking about anything else but a fair judge, in some of the states, such as Massachusetts, it's a more realistic opportunity. And so I didn't want to miss this opportunity because, I would obviously be tremendously affected as a result.
What was your journey towards coming here again? How did you find out that could happen?
I was contacted by my friends about the opportunity of applying for advanced parole and to be able to enter the United States once again. I was shocked by being presented this opportunity because it's something I had never heard of before. At least it being exercised. It's something that most lawyers would tell you is almost, like they have never seen it and they would probably never get a case about advanced parole because it's so rare, especially one that is expedited such as mine was. I learned about this opportunity and within a week I was back in the United States.
You mentioned that you came back to Massachusetts because you wanted a fair shot to get in front of lawmakers and judges that are more liberal than maybe other places around our country. Who have been some of your advocates on the lawmaking side that have supported your fight and your activism since you've returned?
Well, I have to say that the entire delegation from the Democratic Party of Massachusetts have been incredibly supportive. Would not be here if it wasn't because of our local representatives, and also as well as our state and federal representatives. I've been blessed with their support, and obviously I'm not alone. You know, the community has to be behind, representatives and senators. And so I'm just glad that we have a team that is humane and that really are looking out for their neighbor. And so I had the support of them.
Eddie, after all this, why do you still want to live in the United States?
Well, I think that as I've learned many things over the years, you know, one very precious thing is the ability to speak your mind, to protest and to go out there and demand your rights or what is right, right? And so that's something that you can do here in the United States. You know, I think that I know that many people can describe freedom differently for each one of them, but if, you know, there was a way to describe it for me, would be that, you know, you have freedom to speak your mind.
When we watch the news and we see the number of people that are coming in from Mexico to try and come into America, can you help explain to our listeners why there is such an urgency for those that are leaving Mexico to come into our country?
So I think that, you know, people don't want to come here, whether it be from any place in Europe or in South America or Mexico, simply because, you know, one day they just wake up and they want to move to the United States. Every country has its reasons, whether it be economic, you know, political upheaval, and, you know, different things. I think that Mexico and South America, you know, they're just simply, I would say, exercising the right for a free movement, you know, across, you know, the continent that is America. At the moment, I just see it, you know, as a natural process of people migrating to different parts of the world.
According to ICE, their enforcement and removal operations conducted more than 180,000 removals during fiscal year 2020. That's actually a 30% drop from fiscal year 2019 when Eduardo was deported.
Now, with immigration reform back on the table under a new administration, he compares the two presidents' agendas.
I think that we have a new administration. I'm an administration that pledged to support immigration reform, to pass immigration reform. And at the same time, we have a lack of ability of this administration to carry out, you know, an agenda that is pro-immigrant. And so I think that many more things need to be worked out with this administration before it can be called progressive on the immigration side. And so I think that, for one, they should really not be established Title, you know, 42 to expel people, you know, for COVID. I think that is inhumane to have, you know, asylum seekers have to wait on another country that is not the country where they're trying to seek asylum of. They're refusing to use their power. And so I'm expecting, you know, some, you know, more agility, more ability, and also more resources, you know, designated for the Biden administration to fight for immigrant rights and actually establish, you know, seeing immigration and immigrant rights as what it is, right? It's part of our history, of everyday history.
What efforts are you taking on a local level here in Western Massachusetts to help other dreamers?
I'm looking into getting perhaps, you know, some of the other DACA recipients in Massachusetts to probably go and lobby at Washington, D.C. for immigration reform. So perhaps I think that would be a project that I would be happy to work on. But, you know, as the days go on, I'll definitely bring different plans to about how to best advocate for you know, DACA receivers and TPS holders and immigrants here in Northampton.
What do you think your story tells us about what it's like to try to immigrate to the U.S.?
I think if anything, my story would tell those who still describe, you know, the United States as a land of opportunity as a reminder that we need a lot of work to do, you know, in order to keep that same message and actually live up to that message that we had before as America being a land of opportunity. And so I really think that, you know, people would just need to perhaps take a bit more of an active role or to exercise their citizenship, you know, in favor of those at the bottom and those who are immigrants, refugees, asylum seekers.
What would you want to say to someone who might be listening right now who is in a similarly legally precarious position that you used to be in?
I would say reach out to your community. I would say nobody can do it alone. You know, getting someone out of jail, it's you know, a really terrible process, and we make it as hard as possible for people to get out. So, you know, as you know, reach out to your community. Have also a lot of you know, courage and you know, don't give up. But I would say that regardless of that, right, you know, definitely share your story if you can to empower others, you know, and we can, you know, abolish our carceral system as it is.
And lastly, Eduardo, what will you tell your fellow Mexicans that are in country back at home that may want to come into America?
Mexico is an incredibly beautiful place. I've never seen anything as beautiful as many of the states in Mexico. So let's, you know, I would say, you know, let's all try to explore where we are at the moment. And, you know, I think that this is a very good moment for the Mexican people to come together and really celebrate, you know, a moment, you know, where Mexico is thriving. But as well, you know, if their dream is to come to the United States, you know, do everything you can, you know, to make it, you know, to the United States.
Eduardo Samaniego is an immigration activist in Northampton. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this Monday conversation on And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy. Remember, you can find more episodes on our page at nepm.org. You can also send us an email at andanotherthing@nepm.org.
You can follow us on social media. We are at AAT on NEPM across all platforms. I'm Maya Schwader. Have a great evening.